I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio. And this is the very first episode of the Functional Nerds recorded in 2016. It's going to be episode number 259.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcaster. You can follow him on Twitter at ATFMB. My name is John Anilio. I am a musician and a podcaster and a teacher. And you can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. Welcome to the new year. We have an awesome guest today, and that is Lauren Panapinto. She is the creative director for Orbit Books and does a lot of the art stuff over there and just does lots of cool work. And I thought she would be a great person to get on the show who works in publishing but isn't an author. Well, maybe you are an author too. I shouldn't speak ahead of that. But Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. It's great to be on.
Maybe you can, I want to get into it in the main part of the interview, but maybe you could tell us, you know, what your official job title is at Orbit Books and, you know, the sort of general kind of stuff that you do over there.
And don't leave out details of whether or not that's an apothecary table behind you.
Oh, that's actually my, it's a big architectural plans, like file cabinet, and it's full of, that's where I keep all my comic books.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. That's awesome.
I'm a big dork. I am a functional nerd. Some days awesome. High functioning, some days low functioning.
I completely understand.
So my title is creative director of Orbit Books, the Orbit Books division of Hachette Books, which is one of the big five publishers, or big four. I'm not sure. Random House keeps eating publishers, so we might be up to big three soon. I don't know. So the Orbit division has Orbit Books, which is all sci-fi fantasy, and Yen Press, which is graphic novels, specializing more in manga.
I love Yen Press.
Oh, good. Awesome.
I have signed copies of all of Gale's manga.
Oh, God. I loved when they started doing Orbit adaptations. It's been so fun to kind of work both sides of the fence.
Yep. I've got Brent's. I've got Brent's, too. So.
Yeah. Brent's came out great, the hardcover. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was super fun.
Yep.
And Red Hook Books, which is a small imprint that we're growing, that's all commercial fiction, which is pretty much the Orbit editors have great ideas that don't necessarily only fit into sci-fi fantasy, so sometimes we do other genres too. We're kind of testing the waters with that. So what I do, I'm creative director, so what that means is I'm in charge of, you know, kind of steering the visual ship for the entire brand. So making sure that our book covers are not only good, but they also look like Orbit book covers. And it's kind of between me and the publisher, Tim Holman, to decide what that is, like what makes an Orbit book an Orbit book. And I'm in charge of the visual aspect of that. And then Yen Press is a little different. I work with the editors. The editors really pick the artists because it's part of the editorial process. But then the editors and I and the artists will, you know, generate a piece of cover art, and then my team will do the design around that piece. A lot of stuff also is relicensed from Asia, so we adapt a lot of covers to the English market. And then Red Hook is pretty much runs the same as Orbit, it's just not genre. So what I do is, you know, at the beginning of every season, the editors sit down and we talk about what books are in the season, and it's called launch. They launch to me and my team what the new books are going to be for that season. And we just kind of start. It's my job as creative director to decide who works on what. I have another art director and a senior designer that work under me in-house. And I decide kind of, you know, they can kind of say, oh, that book sounded really cool. Can I work on that? But it's kind of up to me to know their strengths and what things they've worked on before. And like, this space opera should go to this guy. And, you know, this thriller should go to this girl. And stuff like that. And then I take off my creative director hat once I've done that and put on my art director hat, which is all of the books that I've decided are my books. An art director decides what the direction is for those books with the editors. Of course, this is all super collaborative. So we decide, you know, depending upon the genre trends that are going on and stuff, we decide if the book should be like a photographic direction or an illustration direction or just a pure design direction. And we kind of, you know, show comps. We talk about comp covers, comp titles, what the trends are. I spend a lot of my life on the internet just keeping on top of trends and new artists and things. And then little by little, we just, you know, start developing the cover. If there's a freelancer, we'll pitch, you know, a couple different artists or things to the editors. It's our process is super collaborative, I think even more so than other book imprints that I've worked for before. It's, you know, it's a lot of geeks in a room kind of all yelling at each other about what they think is best for the book, which is great. It can get a little chaotic sometimes, but it's just everybody's so passionate about our books. Like we're such fans too. So it becomes really fun. So that's kind of most of my job. And then, you know, other parts, I take my position in the community, the art community, really seriously. Sci-fi fantasy has a great, sci-fi fantasy art has an amazingly nurturing community for artists. Irene Gallo at Tor really kind of heads the ship on that. And, you know, I kind of call her the queen of the prom and I'm kind of the princess. So a bunch of the sci-fi fantasy art directors, not just in publishing, but in gaming and stuff, we go to a lot of conventions and we do a lot of portfolio reviews and we offer a lot of advice online and things like that. So a lot of community stuff.
I got to talk to Gail Carriger about her Yen Press book. And for people who aren't fully familiar, the style of art from manga is completely different from like a normal comic. And there typically is a lot of androgyny in it, really. And everybody kind of looks pretty, but they don't necessarily have curves. And Alexia has curves. So yeah. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall when she was arguing with the artist going, no, you have to give her curves. You have to give her curves.
We had that problem on the cover, on the original covers too, because we had this amazing cover model, the woman who actually runs Clockwork Couture, the website, and she was huge in the steampunk community, and she was perfect for the covers, but she was not as endowed as the character. And Gail and I both are, let's say, well-endowed ladies, and we feel strongly about, you know, depicting that classily on covers. But and Donna, you know. It was a wonderful model, a beautiful model, but I think it always bothered Gail a little bit that, you know, it didn't reflect the character perfectly in sure. that way. And when they were talking about the manga, she's like, all right, we're going to make her look right this time. So
yes,
you know, I'm sure the fans didn't mind.
I've been on the receiving end of several conversations from Gail about that topic where I tell Gail, I can't be in this conversation with you.
Well, you know, it's a funny conversation because there's actually a webcomic called Busty Girl, and it's all about stuff that, you know, like girls with who are well endowed like run into in the world. Like, you know, I'm literally always eating lunch and then I look down and I'm like, you know, like, you know, you have like a built-in bib, you know, stuff like silly stuff. It was very important to her to get the character right in the manga.
Yes, because it's a very important part of the character in that, like you're talking about, it gets in her way all the time. Mm-hmm. And it bugs the crap out of her, right? So, I totally get that. Anyway, sorry, John, I completely derailed the conversation.
Oh, no, I think that's a good conversation to have. No, what I was going to say in regard to manga and particularly anime, I think this is a wonderful time to be living if you're into that stuff, because I always had a pretty big interest in that stuff, but never really got beyond what was readily available in terms of anime on TV. And I remember, I think I bought a couple of once they started going to DVD and that kind of thing, but I didn't really keep up with it because it was an expensive habit. 20 years ago. And nowadays, you know, even on Netflix alone, there's countless anime that you can watch, both series and movies. And because I never really got super into it, I always look at that stuff and be like, I bet that's cool. And then I, you know, never really get around to it. But 20 years ago, I probably would have been watching all that and would have been, you know, and then would have gone broke on it, but I decided not to go broke on it 20 years ago because it was like, because you would have had to like pay import prices on everything. And
Oh yeah. 15 years ago, even 15, John, it was, you bought a VHS copy. It was before DVD. Yeah. And you would buy like an episode of something and it would cost you $20. right, on VHS.
Yeah, no, everything's digital.
Yeah.
What's amazing is the fan base is so rabid, and in a good way. But I mean, I'm used to sci-fi fantasy nerds, so, you know, like, I'm used to, like, a very active fan base, but it has nothing compared to the manga fan base. Like, we'll announce titles, and the fan base will know exactly what they were. They've been hearing about them from Japan. They've probably seen the anime already untranslated. And they're like, they're so excited, you know, they're just, you know, at Comic-Con when we announce stuff, there's just screaming all over the place. I'm like, oh.
It's kind of the same thing with music, with, say, Japanese imports for albums, where many years ago, that was the only way you can get certain albums, because they would be signed to it would be an American or a European artist a lot of times, but they'd be signed to a Japanese label, so it would only come out that way. And I had a friend who was, he and I were really into Yes, the progressive rock band Yes, and Steve Howe, who's the guitar player in Yes, put out a bunch of solo albums that for a long time you can only get as a Japanese import. So he ended up spending, like, you know, $35 for each Japanese import.
I remember back when I worked at Doubleday, the building was above, it was the Bertelsmann building, so it was above the Virgin Megastore in Times Square. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's pour out a glass for the Virgin Megastore, or all music stores, I think.
Really,
And I used to, my dad, you know, was a big 60s music fan, and he would, like, have me chasing down some, like, rare reissue in Japanese from the Carpenters or something like that. You know, every time I went into work, I had to, like, go through the Virgin Megastore and, like, dig something out for him. But yeah, no, now it's all online. Now it's
accessible.
Well, I remember Tower Records, so there.
No. Oh, I love Tower Records.
What's interesting about Japanese imports, even to this day, is that most the Japanese, when they release an album there, they still want a bonus Japanese only track, like a track that only appears on the Japanese version. So if you're like a super collector, you'll go and get the Japanese version just to get that one extra track. But it's funny because it's all digital nowadays anyway. So it's just deciding whether, and all of it's on streaming now anyway. So you can still get that bonus track on streaming.
I have Apple Music now, and it's very weird. You can just, like, search for anything and it doesn't matter. And you can still download it to your phone and carry it around. Like the rental versus buying media kind of economy is very interesting.
Yeah, that's another whole discussion we can get into, because I found that too. It's like, yeah, there's really not much of a difference there. But anyway, we'll get it. But you know what? Before we fall down that rabbit hole, let's get into our picks of the week.
Okay.
Picks of the week.
And Lauren, why don't you go first then?
Well, I have been, I was a latecomer to this, but a friend, actually Zoe Robinson, the art director from Fantasy Flight Games, made me start watching Steven Universe. Mm. I like cartoons, but I tend to like retro cartoons, and, you know, like the newer kind of hipper cartoons, like Adventure Time, are kind of leaving me a little cold. They're just, like, so hip and so referential, I couldn't get into it, and so I'd heard about Steven Universe, but I hadn't really watched any of it. And so it was like, oh my God, no, you'd love it. It's perfect for you. And when somebody that knows you really well is like, this is perfect for you, then you check it out. And it's so charming. There's two seasons and they just started the third season. And they're like little 10-minute episodes, and most of them are online, if not all of them. And they're just adorable. It's one of those cartoons that is really, really smart, and it's really great for super young kids, but it's really great for adults too. And, like, they're handling really intense topics like teenage sex and stuff in, like, really, really smart ways, and the world is wonderful and the music is adorable. I mean, that's been my pick for a while. I've been, like, you know, like, evangelical about this show. You know, I, like, walk up to people, I'm like, have you watched Steven Universe yet?
did you see the article about they've exported it to the UK? But in the UK, they are they're modifying it, censoring it, because of some of the stuff that you just mentioned. They decided they didn't want.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like the sexuality.
Yeah,
stuff.
I mean, no spoilers, but the way that they handle, you know, everybody's a gemstone. So the superheroes are all like different gemstones. This sounds ridiculous. Just watch it. But at some point, the different gemstones can fuse together and create a different, like a better, like a powered up version of themselves. And it's a metaphor for sex, and it's handled so intelligently that like little kids get it without getting it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the older the person is that watches it, I've seen this happen with friends' kids already, you know, some of them get it and they're like, whoa. but it's just handled like so delicately and smartly and compassionately. It was great.
Well, and I find it interesting that the UK is censoring that. That usually, usually their stuff comes here and we censor it.
Okay. The US-UK thing is funny. I get that on covers all the time. There's still blogs that will put a bunch of covers from Orbit UK up and say, look, the UK versions are so much better than the US versions. And it's the same thing. Like, I designed them, you know? Like, you guys don't know what's UK versus US. Two of the most popular book designers of the last 10 years are UK, but they do most of their covers for US, and everybody's like, oh, you know, US covers versus UK covers. Like, nobody knows who's doing, like, the fan base doesn't know who's doing these covers. Like, they don't understand, but it's always like, oh, the UK covers are better, the US covers are better.
Well, it's the extra U.
What can you describe as being some primary differences in general between UK and US covers?
I think the differences tend to be genre differences. Like, subgenres are a little bit different between the two markets. So like urban fantasy was a big one. The UK didn't have urban fantasy as quickly as we did, and their cover trends look more like YA, like, you know, more like the Twilight kind of trend, rather than our covers. Really, our urban fantasy grew out of romance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the cover trends came across with romance. So it's a lot of character based and, you know, for good or for ill, you know, sexy ladies. And in the UK, it's much more like objects and like big type and faces and things. So stuff like that. It's usually genre based. You know, but when you get to like big epic fantasy or space opera, it's exactly the same. There was actually, this is a funny story. Tim called me the other day, our publisher called me, and I had sent him a cover, and there was like a red glow around the character. And he called me up and he said, you know, we have to lose the red glow. Can you do something else? Because there's this funny thing that only UK people know. There was like a really famous advertising campaign for like a breakfast cereal, and like people ate the breakfast cereal and they got like a red glow in the commercials. So literally every time somebody sees a red glow, somebody's like, oh, that breakfast cereal. So like there's weird differences like that pop up. But you know,
I'm a marketer by day, and that amuses me because we sit there sometimes in the mornings, and my office mate and I will go through a bunch of like links and feeds and just look at what other people are doing. And there was the story just before Christmas where a Japanese retailer had put up all these signs about this product, and it was fucking this and fucking that and fucking all over the place because it was some sort of slang in Japanese for this product. And they didn't realize what it meant in English. So they did this whole campaign. Fucking this, fucking that. Come in and get your fucking here. And it's like, okay then.
That's funny. Yeah, it definitely helps to have, the Orbit team is split 50-50 UK-US, so we keep each other up on our individual trends.
Very cool.
Cool. All right, well, my pick this week is going to be the Force Awakens novelization by Alan Dean Foster. Del Rey was kind enough to send me a copy. I was so excited when it came, too, because, I don't know, I've been, like, super mega into it. I've gone to see it twice so far.
I have, too.
I'm going for my third time today.
Oh, very good.
I saw
it
twice.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's kind of a minimum, really, you know. But anyway, I was probably going to buy the book anyway, so it was really exciting to get it because it only came out as a physical book. I think it was January 5th, so it's only this past week that it came out. So got it, read it. It's fairly short. It's like 260 pages. If you're super into the movie, which I suspect much of our audience is, it is worth picking up because I haven't read a lot of novelizations of movies, to be quite honest with you. I read a lot of tie-in material, but not necessarily novelizations. And from what I understand, the way that this works is that the author will get us the script early on and start writing his novel based on the script. So the finished product or the movie ends up being edited significantly from what, you know, was initially shot. So there are, if you want to get sort of the DVD extras before they come out, I think I think it's worth reading the book, because there are a few scenes in the book that aren't in the movie. And it does fill in a little bit of, like, some, you know, I feel like the overall impression or the feeling that most people have about the movie is that they really liked it. But they have a lot of questions about it, and there's a couple of like things that they would have liked explained a little better. The book helps with that a little bit. There are a little bit of explaining of the political situations and that.
I have strong feelings about not explaining too much. You explain too much, and that's how you get to the prequels, you know?
I absolutely agree with you there, because that was a conversation that I heard come up, and I've heard it discussed on other podcasts and things. And that's the sentiment that I agreed. It's like, look, we all complained vociferously with the prequels, with all of the political talk. And what I love, and not to get into the rest of this talk to be about Star Wars, but what I loved about the movie is that you walked away with a lot of questions.
Yeah,
and that's great. Yeah, me too. You know, what I heard brought up with one person, which I thought was really interesting, which I hadn't thought about in a long time. You know, the Clone Wars, like they mentioned the Clone Wars in A New Hope. That's a phrase that's thrown out. Yeah. We didn't know for decades what that was.
Yeah, so much stuff. And I think people forget that experience. My childhood experience was very much the original trilogy. And, like, Return of the Jedi was the first movie I remember seeing in theaters. And with my dad.
Aw.
And
I saw it with my mom, and, so I understand.
Yeah. And I took them to see it. It was very exciting. My mom started crying when the text started crawling, and like did not stop crying until the end of the movie. Because I'm the only child, and I was like so into Star Wars, and they're like, no. Anyway, regardless, so I was very used to the original trilogy. I memorized it by the time I was 10. But it's weird for me to be working and interacting with people now on a professional level whose first experience of Star Wars was the prequels. You know, like there are like editorial assistants and like entry level and interns and stuff now that like they saw the prequels first, and they have no like, they don't understand why they were so disappointing, and it's weird, and it's, you know, like it's, Star Wars is a totally different experience for them. And a lot of them had trouble with this new one because it doesn't explain anything. And I'm like, that's how it was. They just dropped you the fucking,
you're right. That's okay. I already cast a bunch of times.
Okay, good. They just dropped you in the middle of that shit, and you didn't know what the fuck was going on, you know? And it was awesome. And it was awesome. That was so exciting, you know? But I thought it was great.
John, you know, it's funny that you talk about the writer getting the script and then having to write the novelization based on that. Years ago on SF Signal, I got to interview Vonda McIntyre. And Vonda McIntyre is this wonderful author. She's got all these books out there. You know, she's created all these worlds. And, of course, me being me, I talked to her for 45 minutes about Star Trek. Because she has written a ton of Star Trek novels, and she wrote the novelizations for the movies. And if you read those novelizations, there's tons of things in there that never made it into the movies. And I, you know, me being a nerd, I was just all over that. And it's exactly what you're talking about. They get this script, and then they write the novel, and then they don't get the edits. They don't get what's taken out. And so the novel tends to have all this extra stuff in there. And it's really kind of a delicate balance that they have to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's, in this particular book, I wouldn't say there's tons of stuff. Like, if you're looking for everything to be explained, it's not. It's just there's a couple of extra scenes.
Sure.
They leaked the script online for the Oscar nods, and they were saying there was a little bit more about, like, the Kylo Ren scene that explained a little bit more, stuff like that.
Well, even
that.
If you go, yeah, if you go back to the original Star Wars novel, you know, there's tons of stuff in there that didn't make it into the original film. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I thought that was kind of a cool nod to have Alan Dean Foster do this novelization
I love that book. Let me tell you, when I completely understand why it happened, and I think there's wonderful stuff coming out of it, but I have so many friends who have worked and lived in the expanded universe for so many years that when they were like, poof, not canon, like, a scream went out. It was like the kid, like the Alderaan.
I was one of the ones screaming. John knows.
Yeah.
I was like, Mary Jane, no!
Right? And to be honest with you, one of my favorites was actually before all that. It was the Han Solo trilogy from Brian Daley. Yeah. Many
years. Yeah, I haven't read everything. I mean, God, I don't think I can. But yeah. I dress up for Halloween. I don't cosplay. I go to a ton of conventions, but you know, it's kind of, you know, you're not supposed to cosplay if you're working the convention. But
tell that to
Dan. Hard for me sometimes. but I always wanted to be. If I was cosplaying, I always wanted to be Jaina Solo because it's like perfect. You get the awesome orange like flight jumpsuit, mm-hmm. but then you also get a lightsaber.
Yeah,
awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, and mm-hmm. you know, there's a person whose Twitter account is Club Jade, and mm-hmm. it's distracted by Star Wars, and it's all about you know it's the account formed from a Mara Jade fan club essentially, and cool. now they're just mm-hmm. like ah. Come on.
Yeah. No, I know. And I know, and I completely understand why they needed to do it. And I think some of the new stuff is great. I'm loving Chuck Wendig's, you know, expansion stuff. And, it, you know, I'm glad that they're starting over, but it's fun to see stuff pop through even in, you know, if you know the expanded universe stuff, there's only so many things they could do. So, you know, like stuff's going to pop into canon that already kind of happened, you know, mm-hmm. like one of Han and Leia's sons going, no spoilers.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, like spoiler warnings are expected.
It's pretty hard, yeah. yeah. And plus, who knew? But, who knew that new canon would come out of Pennsylvania?
Yes. All right, Patrick, what's your pick before we neglect your pick?
I am late to this game as well. My pick, I binged two seasons, and I got through half of the third season before it expired on demand and was no longer available. And I'm sitting there going, why? Why won't you let me watch this? What's going on? Why can't I finish this episode? It's Orphan Black.
Oh, okay.
And it's just one of those things where there's not so much good TV, but there's enough good TV that I don't always have time to watch everything.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
So absolutely. I kind of waited on Orphan Black. The actress, Tatiana, I believe is her name, is just phenomenal in her ability to create all these different characters. My gosh, she must be exhausted at the end of the day. Exhausted.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it's such a good show.
She's so good that I've watched the first two seasons. I know there's three out, and I guess season four will be coming in the spring, I believe. Yes. April, yeah. So I watched the first two seasons, and she's so good that you forget, like, oh yeah, that's the same actress. Uh-huh. Like, you forget. I forget all of the time because she's so good. And I think she finally did get nominated for an Emmy last year. I don't know if she won, but I think. Yeah.
And they do the.
Can I throw?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
I was gonna say, do I get an extra pick? Because I feel like I really should. And it's not a plug pick. I've actually been really enjoying it. But have you guys watched The Expanse yet?
Oh, yes.
The first four episodes are online.
Yes, yes.
So good, right? That's my very first, like, my first book series that became a thing on film. And it's, I love it. I love every minute of it.
I love the books. I love the audiobooks. Jefferson Mays is freaking
the audiobooks
awesome.
Are great.
There's one that he doesn't do, and my intention is to get Daniel and Ty in a corner at the next convention I see them at and berate them for not having Jefferson. They need to do like Butcher and have them go back and have Jefferson Mays re-record that freaking book. So I never have to listen to that other guy again because he completely screwed up Avasarala. But anyway, I love The Expanse. I was sitting there and I'm watching it and the moment came. The moment I had been waiting for, the moment that just makes you go E, which is Holden meets the Rosinante's coffee maker. And he gets this look on his face and he is so, it's love at first sight, right? It's love at first sight. And so I took the picture and I posted it across social media. I'm like, Holden and the coffee maker, love at first sight. I love that show.
Now, I know they cast it so well. Yes. They really cast it so well.
I haven't watched it yet, Patrick, and I plan on watching it. I don't have cable, so like
The first four episodes are on sci-fi.com.
Yeah, you can watch.
Okay, I'll have to do that. I'll probably just, you know, as the season goes on, I'll probably just buy a season pass on Google Play or whatever. But let me ask you this: so far, well, how many episodes have aired?
Five.
Four aired.
Five.
Or,
four. They just did the fifth
five?
One.
Oh, five.
And I will say this. You must read at least the first two books in order to
get this. I've read the first two.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, I've read the first.
Because there's characters from the second book are in the show.
Yeah, they kind of, they're mixing up a little bit.
Okay, but do I have to read book three?
I don't think so.
Before I start watching?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think, it's hard to tell, but people have, I've had people watch it and they haven't read the books at all and they're enjoying it, so. You don't have to have read the books, but if you're nerding out about it,
I tend to like the first two. I definitely like to read before, and I've read Leviathan Wakes and Caliban's War. I have not gotten to Abaddon's Gate yet, but
you need the first two. You absolutely need the first two.
Okay.
I don't think you need the third one.
Well,
and if you want to see something fun, go check out Sarah Torn's Facebook, Bookworm Blues, because she has read the books because of me. I got her to read them. I got her to do the audiobooks. And she now loves audiobooks. I actually converted her to audiobooks. So some of the 200 and something books that she read last year were audiobooks, thanks to me. But anyway, she's been consuming them as fast as she possibly can and get them from the library and listen to them. Her husband hasn't read any of them. And she's sitting there watching The Expanse with him, and she's squeeing over little things that then he's going, what? 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 What was that? Tell me. You know, and then she's having to explain some stuff to him. So that's kind of interesting and fun. I love the show.
That was like me watching Game of Thrones with somebody who hadn't watched it before. And they're like, I really like, you know, Ned Stark. I'm like, don't get attached. Anyone.
Continue, Lauren, sorry.
No, I was going to say the Expanse covers were actually some of my favorite covers to work on. We were talking about, when Leviathan Wakes popped up, you know, the last couple of years in space opera had felt very dark covers, like very dark and gloomy and grim. And, I really wanted, and the editors really wanted like fun and, you know, motion and adventure back in a space opera. And
I love those editors.
And I hired, we hired Daniel Dasiu to do the art, and he is an art director at ArenaWare. So ArenaNet. And a video game company, and he does amazing work, but he can kind of only work on it on the weekends. And he was kind of like, well, I don't have a lot of time. And I'm like, no, we need you. Like, I need you to do it. And he's like, not that he didn't want to do it, but you know, he was just super busy. So I was like, look, we're going to give you a paragraph and you just do whatever you want to do. Like, just take this paragraph, you know, like, don't worry about being perfect to the book. You don't have to read the manuscript. Just do something awesome that you do. And he sent back that piece of art, and literally we made, like, one color change, and that was it. So, and it was perfect. And the ships are not exactly, at any point are the ships exactly what's in the book, but it's just the adventure and the feeling that's in the book. And then that's what we've done every time. For every book, I get a paragraph from Daniel and Ty, and we send it to the artist. I'm like almost not even involved in the process. So I'm just the middleman. And he does such wonderful work. And now he says they're one of his favorite series that he's ever worked on. So I'm like,
So can I get those as posters?
Yeah, he can give you some posters.
No, I'm serious.
We did posters of the original Leviathan Wakes.
And I'm not asking for a gimme. I'm saying, is there a place where I can go and buy? I love to get like book cover art.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about that in Orbit. There's definitely been some covers that our artists retain the rights to their copyrights to their own.
And I think
art.
They should sell them
so
online.
So we've been talking Yes. And some of them do, and some of them don't have time, and some of them, you know, so we've been talking about working with some of the artists to get some
that
of them,
awesome.
The book cover art
awesome.
Online.
So
stay tuned.
Who was the editor on The Expanse? Do you know? On, like, the books?
Dong Lan Song.
Okay. So it wasn't Davey.
It was not
okay.
Davey.
So it wasn't gotcha. Okay.
Davey is evil, but she's a lovable evil. They were Dong Lan's books, and also my favorite covers to work on, and one of my favorite authors that we have is Mira Grant. If you guys haven't read those Newsflesh books,
it's an interesting conversation to have with Seanan, because she's like, I got to be a debut author twice.
Yeah.
And it's the way she says it is just hilarious.
We got in so much trouble when she was in the office a couple weeks ago.
No.
Because the two of us just sit in my cubicle and gab. Like, she's a White Queen fan, I'm a Jean Grey fan, we're fighting about Scott Summers, you know, like, at the top of our lungs all day. And it's open plan in our office now, so finally somebody had to come over and they're like, can you guys please go in our conference room?
She and I, but I had her on SF Signal and we started talking about TV shows. And an hour later, she's like, you know, we haven't even talked about my books. They're like, yeah, I know, but we had so much fun.
Yeah. She's a dangerous one because I'll start working on a book cover for her, especially the Parasitology series. And she'll just email me. It'll be like a Google Images link. And I'm like, I'm not clicking this. It's going to be the most disgusting thing I've ever in my life. So now she like hides them in emails and stuff. And I'll click them like not thinking. I'll be like, oh, tapeworms.
Before I wrap it up, you mentioned that you're more Jean Grey. How do you feel about Sansa Stark playing Jean Grey in the upcoming movie?
Well, it can't be any worse than X3, can it? Let me tell you, X the original X-Men movie was fine. You know, it was a new thing, superheroes. X2 was really good, and like the Phoenix sign at the end, I was like so excited. I went into X3 and I literally came out with tears in my eyes. It was so bad. To me, as a Jean Grey fan, like the Dark Phoenix saga was
huge.
That's what got me comic books. I like tripped into.
Me too.
Somebody bought me X Factor number one. All I had ever read was Wonder Woman. And I was like, who, what the hell is going on? And like, that's what got me into comics. And then just to see it like, raped.
Yeah, it was
horrible. Yeah.
It was painful. So yeah. I'm glad they reset, you know, like, my heart can't break anymore.
It's interesting that they're mixing generations now, right? So they're going to have Jean Grey and Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I think they screwed the pooch the first time out. I don't understand why they just didn't do the original team the first time, you know?
Like, Who knows?
Yeah.
Only Bryan Singer knows.
Well,
he's gone off to screw up Batman, so...
Bryan Singer's not Batman. This is another guy screwing up Batman. Anyway, it's fine. I think that was like such an interesting show that we just had because the picks and the interview sort of blended into one thing, and I think that was
great. I'm trying to get some book cover knowledge in there.
No, that's what I mean. I thought it was it was great. It was great. But Lauren, I should direct people. You're on Twitter. It is @PlanetPinto on Twitter. Follow her there, and you're on Facebook and all that kind of stuff too. And we're
more active on Facebook and Instagram.
So go search her out there. And what else would you like to let people know before we kind of wrap it up here today?
Well, if you're an artist, there's a lot of good information. A lot of the art directors anonymously give information, not just sci-fi fantasy, but just about art business, because a lot of art schools don't teach enough art business. So there's a Tumblr called dearartdirector.tumblr.com where you can anonymously ask questions of art directors and we'll answer them honestly and with sarcastic gifts. And then there's a site called drawnanddrafted.com where artists can find educational resources, but also we do a lot of projects, things like that. It's like an umbrella. It's like the Justice League, the secret Justice League of art directors. And we all have spy names. I can't tell you what my name is, but I can't reveal my secret identity. But yeah, we have like a dozen. And so that's great. And also, if you're a person that needs art, that's a good place to go and start. We're building up kind of more the explaining how to commission art for, self-published authors, small authors, things like that. So.
Excellent. Awesome. Before we do wrap it up, I just want to also mention to people that if you enjoy the show, if you like what Patrick and I do here, consider becoming one of our patrons over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Right now we have 37 patrons. 37. We are grateful to them for supporting the show. It really makes a world of difference, not only financially, but just as that people dig the show enough to help us keep it running. So thank you so much to those 37 people that are supporting us. And if you like the show, we do a show every week. So it's four shows a month. And, if you gave $1 a month, that'd be 25 cents a show. And if you feel like you're getting value and entertainment out of the show, consider backing us there. Once again, patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything else before we wrap it up?
As this episode has aired, I have launched a new ebook called Cahill's Unfinished Business. I'm mortified that Lauren might go look at the cover. But it was done by a graphic artist. I actually had someone do the cover, so I think it's amazing. But she might be sitting there going, "Well, I wouldn't have used that color, and I would have done." No, just kidding.
I do appreciate though. It's funny, you know, some authors who shall remain nameless, but not my authors, of course. But some authors will be, you know, used to the process working with an art director and a team, and I think they might not appreciate how much work goes into that and how many skills go into it until they go and try to do a project on their own, a side project or self-published project, and then they can't understand why they can't get the same level of quality. And I'm like,
well, I work with one of the graphic artists from work who is phenomenal, and he actually has told me that it will be okay to tell his name soon because he's willing to like help other people, but he doesn't want to do it yet because he's trying to get his website up and running and stuff. But anyway, it's Cahill's Unfinished Business. It's available on Kindle and Nook. It's $3. I suggest people go check it out. It's a novella.
Awesome.
Very good. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll have to have you on again soon because Patrick's always asking me, like, let's get people other than authors on the show. So I'm like, you know, Lauren would be awesome because Patrick's like a big art fan and doodler.
Well,
and
if you want some of the, you know, if you want to get introduced to some cover artists, let me know because that would be fun.
Oh, that would be great. You know, I'll email you that later in the week because we'd love to get some more artists on.
So I'm always sitting
here. Okay, yes.
Nice.
All right, Lauren, thank you so much. Have a great day. And everyone else, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?